good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sycamore. With me is Benjamin Solak. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Visa, who are reminding us to help support our local businesses. Whether it's the corner stores, the coffee shops, favorite local shops, whatever it is, local businesses have always been there on your team supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them like they've been there for us for so many years. The next time you go shopping, make sure that you make the choice to go to a local business and look for the contactless symbol and pay and tap to pay with your contactless Visa to help support your local community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. NFL, but it's college football show today, Ben. We got to talk about the college guys. We talked about the NFL guys yesterday on the Monday edition of the podcast, but we got to turn back the clock a little bit and recap some things that happened on Saturday. We're still limited in the amount of games that we have to talk about. Right now, it's just the ACC, the Big 12, a lot of other random schools, group of fives. We get the ACC, or we get the SEC next week. We get the Big 10 after that. So we're going to start getting these flood of games that maybe will feel like college football of old. But even from the limited amount of games that we had to sample this weekend, I know you have a closer eye on the college football games on Saturdays than I do. What'd you think of the weekend overall?
I thought, Trevor, it was a very respectable and healthy weekend of college football. Unlike some people who said in the pre-show that we were finally getting the SEC, which means we were getting real college football games. Interesting.
Okay, listen, when I'm on my Twitter timeline and I'm trying to figure out what it just means more, okay? Did you do that on purpose? Right. Did you do that on purpose? This is an SEC household.
No, I didn't, but
you
I'm happy I did.
When I'm on my Twitter timeline on Saturday, and I was away from the TV, and I was trying to check the scores. The thing that, you know how Twitter does that thing now where, like, if you scroll all the way to the top, it'll tell you certain scores, and you can, like, click on it, and you kind of follow it live?
Yes.
Clemson's, go on. You're about to say something sarcastic. Go ahead.
10-second story. I once, like, quote tweeted something that Casey Royals tweeted with a joke, and then the Casey Royals responded to me, and now Twitter shows me the Casey Royals score every single time they're playing at the top of the screen. So I know how the Casey Royals are playing all of the time.
That is a great 10-second story.
Twitter's like, listen, you clearly are a huge Casey Royals fan. I'm like, yo, I made one joke.
You got to get merch now.
I feel like I have to become a Royals
fan.
You got that
hat rack behind you, you know, like that you do in your football videos.
Yeah.
You got to throw up a Casey Royals hat.
A Casey Royals one would make sense. But anyway.
So I see Clemson's playing the Citadel, and at this point in the game, it's like 35-0, but that's not even the worst part. The worst part is that they didn't even have the Citadel's logo. They just put up the NCAA, or just like generic logo, like the circle with the letters NCAA on it. Don't tell me that you're not looking forward to SEC on SEC crime next week when you've got that kind of stuff happening over the weekend.
She just put up the UNC logo. Nobody would know. They'd look at it and they'd be like, really? And then they would look at the game and they'd be like, yeah, that's probably UNC. Because the colors are just the same.
Should have put up just like some weird logo. Like a movie, like the Avengers logo or something. You know, like just the giant A. Just see if anybody notices. Be like, wait, hold on.
It's like a very classic logo that's clearly
like,
not.
Because a lot of people like don't know what the Citadel is. So they could be like, hold up, wait, what they might have done something here with the schedule. I mean, like, Notre Dame blew out South Florida 52-0. Big rip.
Yeah, that one was extremely funny because the line was, like, Notre Dame. I think the line was, like, Notre Dame in the low 40s, maybe the high 30s. And then the total was, like, 49. And Notre Dame was like, everybody, don't worry. We got the whole thing covered.
Who dominated this game? I'm looking at this stat sheet, and Ian Book only had 143 yards.
Notre Dame defensive line and offensive line dominated this game.
Okay.
South Florida just could not survive in the trenches.
All right. Well, where do you want to start about this game. About this recap of this weekend? Because we're touching
Trevor
on a
Lawrence
little bit
had
here,
one but incompletion against the Citadel. Stock down. No. So Lawrence was like quarterback watch for the day. Lawrence was bananas.
Do 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 do
Is that a thing?
That was like the quarterback watch of the day. You know, it was like the old newscast, kind of like, oh, we got breaking news.
I accept. I mean, like, I'm cool with that.
You know, maybe if you guys would subscribe to the TDN premium account, we could actually hire a real producer and input real music into it. It's up to y'all. But for now, I'm just going to, you know, have to acapella it.
Singing. Right. Trevor Lawrence was tremendous against Citadel, as expected. Lawrence is going to slice and dice up everybody that he sees for the entire year. I'm kind of interested to see what he looks like against, like, I don't know, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame. But, like, that's all the end of the year. This is all great. Desmond Ridder really didn't have much of a challenge against Austin Peay. Cincinnati waxed them. They ran the ball a ton. Michael Warren's backup, Garrett Doakes, that running back looked really good.
He had four touchdowns.
Yeah, but we'll see what Cincinnati looks like when they start playing some actual competition in the AAC.
So I have a question that's not related to the actual game, which I know is a big shock. Doakes had two touchdowns of his four, which was a school record, that were from the Wildcat direct snap kind of like formation at the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
They are the Cincinnati Bearcats. So do they call it the Bearcat formation, or do they still call it the Wildcat?
I mean, I feel like they did that like a lot of programs have. They do that, right?
Right.
Arkansas called it the Wild Hog.
Yeah.
They were running it,
which was awesome.
What did they call it? What did they call it for LaVisca? They called it something for LaVisca Chenault in Colorado. Can't remember.
The Wild Buff? I don't know.
That would be actually pretty lame.
Would be pretty lame.
They might, but I mean, like the theory is sound. We're gonna do not a quarterback in the backfield, which means this formation is named after a scary animal. Like, that, I think that holds.
I feel like if Christian McCaffrey was ever in the backfield for the Wildcat, you'd have to call it the Wild McCaff.
Wild Calf, right. What if, like in all seriousness, like, what if it's, like, the Cardinals? Like, what if it's, like, a really, like, lame mascot? It's, like, not a scary animal? Oh, the Wild Cardinal. They're out in the Wild Card. That's not scary. Like, then you have to stay with Wildcat, which
yeah.
at least has
no. I think you're right. That's got to be the stipulation. Yeah, yeah. There's got to be you and I on this podcast, and maybe the listeners can help us with this. We've got to come up with a formula to, is your mascot scary enough on the scale to rename the Wildcat formation?
Right. It's the Wildcat inflection point. Everything below it, can't use it. Right. Everything above feel free to adjust it.
Listen, analytics has come as far as it has for this reason, to get to this point. It is now up to us to take it the final leg and establish the Wildcat renaming threshold.
Every day on this podcast, we break barriers, Trevor. I love it.
That's why people got to listen every day. Can't take a podcast off.
Present. All right, so Lawrence was very good. Not much information we could get from Desmond Ridder. It was very sad to see in the Oklahoma State game, Spencer Sanders went down with an ankle injury almost immediately. And so they put in their backup and then subsequently their third stringer to try to find the dub against Tulsa, which they were able to do. But boy, the Big 12 is struggling right now. Both De'Aaron King and Michael Cunningham of Miami and of Louisville, respectively. I believe it's Malik Cunningham now, actually. I think he's changed his name or it wants to be called by a different name. But anyway, both King and Cunningham, who played in the game of the week in the evening slate, I thought were impressive. Cunningham was forced into more difficult throwing situations and struggled accordingly in those situations. King, ball comes off the hand real nice, man. I mean, there's a lot that you've got to go through in terms of his throwing mechanics and his size and his arm strength and his decision making. But when that thing comes off the hand, it's clean. You know what I mean? He's got a nice little whip. Miami's offense was impressive. There's things to talk about there, but Miami's offense was impressive. So King put out a good performance. That was good to see. Kenny Pickett is fun. Pittsburgh, he had a good day. Pittsburgh's 2-0. He's got a zippy arm. I don't love him, but like I think that he's going to get NFL interest for sure. Levi Lewis at Louisiana is just, I don't think he's accurate enough, to be honest, to have real NFL interest. I think he's a Shrine Game guy more than he is a Senior Bowl guy. But He's fun, and he rallied. He helped pull that program. They were down Georgia State's 21-7, if memory serves, and they brought that thing home in overtime in a big letdown spot. So not a big day for big name quarterbacks. It was very much just Lawrence among the top guys. Obviously, we get Justin Fields starting next week. But Derek King is probably your big quarterback winner of week two outside of Lawrence.
What do you think of Dylan Gabriel from UCF? I know he's not I know he's not draft eligible, but you know, he tossed another four touchdowns. UCF's offense is always built around just massive stats for its quarterbacks, really anybody at this point. They seem to just blow a lot of inferior opponents away, and they stuff the stat sheet. Dylan Gabriel's got some crazy stats along with a lot of other UCF quarterbacks of the past because that's just how they are built. But you said that you watched a lot of that game. I didn't catch a lot of that game. I was watching the condensed version afterwards, and, you know, he's fearless. You know, they teach their quarterbacks to be very fearless, and I think that's absolutely an asset when you go to the NFL, but there's a lot more than just a passing attitude, because when you have that aggressive nature to really attack coverages the way that UCF quarterbacks do, you got to have the arm. You know, you got to have the arm to do that at the next level to kind of keep that allurement and the reason why you would enjoy a prospect, cover a prospect coming from that kind of a system. What do you think of Dylan Gabriel? We're a year away from drafting him. He's not draft eligible this year, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on him.
Yeah, no, so this was big test day for Gabriel. Georgia Tech, not a tremendous defense, but a good program. UCF's first game out for this year. Gabriel won the job last year as a freshman. You know, he comes to UCF. He signed like a little bit shortly after the Milton injury. And so he thought at the time he might be QB2 behind Daryl Mack. Brandon Wimbush transfers in. Mack and Wimbush are fighting for that starting job. Mack breaks the ankle in training camp. Wimbush has got the starting job, but Gabriel's having a really good camp. Wimbush is Brandon Wimbush. So they go to that first game last year, and they go, all right, we're going to play both our quarterbacks. And Gabriel's just flat out better as a true freshman. Mm-hmm. So they say, all right, we're going to start Gabriel. And then Gabriel's flat out good for his entire freshman year. And you know, he did something which UCF doesn't do, which he lost some games. Yeah, you know, he threw some picks. Like, you know, he wasn't Mackenzie Milton. But, and this is what I wrote about, and some Knights fans were pissed off about me for it. They were actually really pissed off because I called them the Golden Knights once. And they're like, we haven't been the Golden Knights since 2007. It's like, well, that was a bad decision. Golden Knights is way cooler than Knights. Anyway, Gabriel is not the college quarterback that Milton was. He is not as accurate. He is not as willing and as smart with his scrambles. Milton's maturity was bananas, right? In the Scott Frost offense and in the Josh Heupel offense, he was just keyed in mm-hmm. on execution, mm-hmm. critical. Gabriel is not that, but from a NFL perspective, from a prospect perspective, he's more than Milton was already. Because when you watched Milton, it became very clear that the arm was going to present problems. And a lot of, again, like a lot of UCF fans were like, here's stats about Milton being really good deep passer. Yeah, 20-plus yards being the bucket we're talking about, which is the bucket I use for deep passing when I chart, can tell us about what he does when he's throwing vertical routes, but it does not really tell us a lot about arm strength, because if you're playing at the group of six level in the AAC, you can reach 50 yards. Like Milton had that caliber of arm. He didn't have like a you know, Brett Rippon arm. Love you, Brett Rippon. But we were looking at like a Kyle Lauletta arm. But it was not going to be a great arm for NFL play. It was going to be an arm that, when he came out, was going to lower his stock. You could tell when he tried to hit tight windows and when he was in scramble drills trying to throw deep that he didn't have the ideal distance for the league and he didn't have the ideal zip for the league. Gabriel can whip that thing. Oh, man, his arm is live. He's got a hammer. And while he is not the same scrambler, while he's not the same decision maker, there and certainly he attempts throws that he probably shouldn't attempt and gets lucky on them because he has that arm. He's clearly more of an NFL starting caliber athlete in terms of his arm strength, his arm angles, his velocity. And so that's what's interesting about Gabriel's is, if not for the Milton injury, which, you know, McKenzie's making like an incredible recovery and it's awesome to see, and he's helping on that staff, would not be surprised if Mackenzie Milton is a significant coach in college football in the next 10 years. Given the way that I've seen him play and I know his love for the game. for everything that Milton was and that recovery he made. If not for his injury, we probably wouldn't have got the exposure to Gabriel that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabriel wouldn't have the experience that he has to this point.
Right.
And we wouldn't be thinking about Gabriel in his junior year next year as being a potential guy to watch, but he absolutely is. I think in terms of, we don't know who's going back yet, but in terms of guys I'm excited to, you know, age up and age into eligibility. People talk about Sam Howell, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this Gabriel kid can play. So he's excited to watch for that reason.
He had a couple of throws that I was watching the highlights of that you mentioned he probably won't get away with in the NFL, and there were a couple of throws into the end zone for two of his four touchdowns that he had this past weekend
right.
where they were just like mile-long throws. You know, they were to the opposite hash.
They had him throw a far hash pylon fade, and he just – yeeted that thing,
and I mean, like,
and the corner was stunned.
Well, he got it there, but it wasn't at least the one that I'm thinking of, because I can't remember if the
right, was behind the corner.
Yeah, it was just like clearly, like just like behind the corner. And you're right, the corner was never expecting it, basically, because that throw should never be made. And he's got a little bit of a long release to him. He's got a little bit of a wind up, but he's got some heat on it. He gets it there. I think he's a fun college quarterback. But even as I was watching that game, I was like, man, I don't think. He's going to be an NFL quarterback, at least right now. I just think the release is too long. He's too wacky in what he's doing. His decision-making and what they have him do at UCF, I just, like, that kind of stuff would never fly in the NFL. And the only way that it would is if you have a rare arm and rare accuracy. And I don't see those things from Dylan Gabriel. And so I just wanted to kind of get the conversation going on it, because he's going to, again, UCF is going to put up so many points, and people are eventually going to ask us, like, hey, what do you think of Dylan Gabriel? Is Dylan Gabriel an NFL prospect? Like, here's his numbers versus prospects of the past, and he might blow some guys out of the water. And it's just like, I'm not there with him. I think the arm is powerful, but I think he's kind of a loose cannon. So those are
my sophomore.
This is true.
Start.
Not saying that, like, he cannot improve, but there are even some just tendencies and, like, stylistic preferences from him that I think when I look at it, it's like, okay, you're going to have to be different with what you're doing here in the NFL, no matter what. And I wonder if he's going to be that willing to change, knowing how successful it is at UCF. So
if you want if you want NFL ready UCFers, that wide receiver, Marlon Williams.
Oh, Marlon Williams.
Yeah. He plays a slot for him. And he's like 6'2", 218. Like, he is, like, thick. He is built.
He's a big dude.
He's not a big slot, because he's not like a tight end height, tight end length dude, nor is he like a traditional slot. He's just like an H-back. They just got out there playing slot, and he's a bully at the catch point. When you're that dense, right? Like, he's just super physical down the field, really competitive. He's a lot of fun.
Then the Oklahoma
transfer, Jalen Robinson, Jalen Flash Robinson, they call him. Who is, and like I said, he's an OU transfer. He was a 4-star recruit there. He's their speed replacement to Dylan Gabriel, and or not to Dylan Gabriel, to Gabriel Davis, excuse me. And
I
Dylan
always
Gabriel,
got those two confused.
Yeah,
last year,
Dylan Gabriel is willing to air that thing out for him, and Robinson can run under it. There was a question of kind of how they're going to replace Davis. Robinson's obviously answering that call, and he looked good against Georgia Tech.
Is Marlon Williams like a rocked up dude?
Yes, but also it does look like he's a little bit, like, you know, got a tummy.
Now, would you say that he's a rock autoed up dude?
Oh. Yes.
Of course you would. You know why, Ben?
It's rockauto.com.
Because it's rockauto.com, a family-owned business serving online customers all of their auto part needs, folks, for the last 20 years. We introed that one a little less traditional this time, but if you have listened to this podcast before, you know that we stand rockauto.com as the place to go for all of your auto part needs. They've got everything from engine control modules, to brake parts, to tail lamps, to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's your classic car or your daily driver, they've got everything that you need. It's just a few easy clicks away. The catalog is super unique and easy to navigate. That's the easiest part. I know that looking for auto parts, whether it's fixes or upgrades, can sometimes be overwhelming because you don't always know exactly what you're looking at for the brands or the parts or your make and your model, but Rock Auto lays it out very easily. It's super easy to get to exactly where you need to and order what you need to get. They have got really reliable low prices. I know they'll be able to compete with any local auto shop in your area. These guys are the real deal. If you contact them, whether you're buying something or whether you just got a question for them, they've got awesome customer service as well. And they also have like a little comment box. If you just contact them in whatever way, let them know the Locked On NFL Draft sent you. That would really help out us here on this podcast. But we know that if you go there, you're going to be contacting them one way or another, whether it is buying something or just inquiring something of them. Ask them if they have a part in stock or if it's going to be coming in stock. And even if they don't have anything there, they're going to get you in the right direction because they're awesome people and that's just what they're all about. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts that you are ever going to need over at rockauto.com. Who else are we talking about this week? What's a guy who really stood out for you from a scouting standpoint moving forward?
I thought Brevin looked great for Miami. I alluded to that Miami offense a little bit earlier. Brevin Jordan, Miami tight end, who I think we agree is tight end 3.
Correct.
I think he's you got your tier 1A, which is Freiermuth and Pitts of Penn State and Florida, respectively, both of whom we will see this season. And then Jordan we have as kind of the 1B in that tier. And a lot of what it comes down to for Jordan is just that he doesn't play in line. He is exclusively a big slot, flex Y, supersized wide receiver sort of a guy. But then 7 for 120 and a touchdown, including the 47-yarder. I think he had another long reception or touchdown reception called back for penalty, if memory serves. Once again, man, and listen, this Louisville defense, about as bad as it gets. But once again, you just don't see tight ends move like this dude. Like, there's just, when the ball's in his hands. I remember I tweeted about it after his one touchdown, and then Kyle tweeted, like, the exact same thing. Right. And that's how like you get a feel for like just how special a guy is when like everybody's kind of acknowledging he's just slippery. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a word you use for tight ends, but he's just tough to get a paw on.
I'm probably saying like all the dumbass scouting cliches right here, but like he's surprisingly elusive for a dude that is that built, like the way that he is. Move that way, but he does. I feel like, right, often when you get guys who are of, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
you're fine.
Actually, I did. Screw you. It's my podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
Talk.
When you get guys of Brevin Jordan's build, when they're athletes, you think that they're just like straight line athletes. Like, hey, get off the line of scrimmage, get vertical, get up the seam. Like, that's just what you do. And Brevin Jordan can do that, but he'll also hit you sideline to sideline. You know, like, he'll also be tough to get a hand on, as you mentioned there. And so that is why I do think that even though Brevin Jordan is tight end 3 for both of us and probably for a lot of people around the country, that doesn't mean he's just like this guy that you could kind of brush off figuratively and literally.
Right. That's the thing is, all right, 6'3", 245, Brevin Jordan, height, weight. So the ideal balance here is that he's too quick, too fast, too explosive for linebackers to handle. And then the other end of that stick is he's too big and too physical for safeties, for slot corners to handle. And the first half is true. He's too quick, too elusive, too slippery, too explosive for linebackers to handle. But he's also that for safeties. And that's the part that's so confusing, right? Like, that's supposed to be like slot receivers and backs. Like, oh, they can beat safeties in space. Not the 240-pound tight end.
Right,
It's defensive backs that he's just out here slipping right by. So his movement skills are really just unteachable, right? And there's just a well of natural talent here, which the players are not comparable. But I brought this up when we talked about Jordan in summer scouting. I'm reminded of David Njoku when he came out with O.J. Howard and Evan Engram. And it was, all right, Engram and Howard, for me, are better prospects, and for a lot of people are better prospects. But when Njoku moves, you're kind of looking and you're like, what am I how can I not look at him move? Like, this is crazy, right? There's so much here. And that's why he ends up getting valued in the first round the way that he did. Now, Njoku's a cautionary tale with the development that he got in Cleveland. You're going to bring a guy like Brevin Jordan into your offense. You got to have a whole plan for him. And you got to be willing to sacrifice plays, sacrifice structure for his sake, right? You're going to have to, like, throw a tight end screen. That's got to be in your offense. There are teams that love tight end screens, right? Like the Eagles throw like 5 tight end screens to Dallas Goedert a day. But there are teams who like don't have that in the arsenal. You're going to have to add that for this player. So he's going to change the way your offense looks. He's not a plug and play guy. You got to structure some stuff around him, especially early. But Jordan against Louisville reminded us what it looks like when you're just an elite athlete with the ball in your hands. And sometimes we have elite athletes who play running back. Sometimes we have elite athletes who play wide receiver. We rarely expect for a tight end, even those with top tier athleticism, for that to manifest itself in a yak way. Usually manifests itself in route running, downfield, contested catch. Jordan's just so good underneath. And so for a lot of spread style offenses, for offenses that want to work short to intermediate, they have quarterbacks that like to get rid of the ball quick. Right, like I think about what you could do with this guy in Carolina with Teddy Bridgewater. I think about what Darren Waller just was for Las Vegas and for Derek Carr last night when they beat the Saints. That's what you're looking at in terms of Brevin Jordan. I think Darren Waller is going to be a name that gets brought up a lot with him in terms of his usage and where he can be successful. Exciting player and a good reminder that while we have Jordan as that 1B and we're about to see Pitts, we're about to see Freiermuth,
yeah,
this is still a legit prospect.
A couple of guys I wanted to shout out before we moved on to a little bit of a preview of what would be next week's college football slate. Tylan Wallace, wide receiver out of Oklahoma State. We've talked about him a lot on this podcast. He had 4 receptions for 94 yards. I thought he was showing that springy, unique, firecracker kind of athleticism. He's just a guy who just goes up and gets crazy catches, even whether it's through contact or creating separation. I thought that it was a great first game for Tylan Wallace back. But I also want to shout out the guy who is opposite him, Allie Green IV, the corner from Tulsa. I thought was giving Tylan Wallace a nice little one-on-one battle throughout the day. And so he's definitely a guy that I'm going to have to get some more eyes on as I watch him throughout the season, because Tylan's tough to cover. There are not a lot of corners that have been able to handle Tylan Wallace really over the last three seasons. And I thought that he did a really good job holding his own. The other one, Reggie Roberson from SMU, finished the day with, hold on, got to find the stats here, 9 receptions, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns. Looks smooth, man. You know, I'm very curious to see what kind of numerical athlete he is, like what he's going to run at the combine, how he's going to test, because I think that he is super smooth at his feet and his cuts, and he can create separation in a lot of different ways, but you do have to have kind of a threshold of athleticism to really be an impact player in the NFL, and I like his game as a receiver. I think he's calm, I think he's confident, and again, smooth. That's the word that keeps coming back to me as I watch Reggie Roberson, and so I know I won't get that answer for a couple months here. What is this, 6 months, 7 months away? But as I continue to watch him, hopefully I see a little bit more. I continue to see him unlock that speed because I think that he has got the point of the game down. Was there anybody else? Paris Campbell got a pick. It was an overthrown screen pass, but hey.
Campbell, back in the NCAA, back in the ACC, baby.
Paris Ford, the safety from Pittsburgh, got an interception. It was from an overthrow on a screen, but hey, he was there. He made the diving interception for it. Harvell Pell. He got an interception.
Peel?
It's Harvell Peel.
Suck it.
You've got me all messed up with him. So Harvell Peel, the safety from Oklahoma State, he also got an interception. He also got beat on a TD, though. God. Get over it. People make mistakes. He got an interception, but he also got burned for a TD there. It's kind of showed that game against Clemson. There was definitely the highlights of what Harvell Peel could be, but also the lowlights of what he was like in coverage when he was trying to cover a receiver towards the corner of the end zone. Anybody else before we move on to what is technically called week 4 of the college football season? Anybody else you want to shout out, Ben?
Did you talk about your Tulsa corner?
Yeah, I did. Thank you for paying attention.
Yeah, no, anytime. Victor Dumakeje, the Duke edge, which a lot of people are in on Chris Rumpf. One of them hosts this podcast. I'm not that guy. Still suspicious of the weight and suspicious of how he ends up on the field. But his running mate at Duke, Victor Dumakeje, when they played Boston College, was impressive. And he was going up against Zion Johnson, the transfer that they like a lot. They're out of Davidson. Johnson was expected to play at guard. They had to kick him to tackle. And Dumakeje welcomed him to Power 5 play. A lot of length, a lot of power in that rusher, and he's a senior. He's been there for a long time. He probably is what he is. He's probably a middle round pick. He's probably a rotational guy, but nice to see him come out and be as productive as he was. An important reminder that Rumpf isn't the only defensive line prospect in that group. You brought up Roberson, which is good. Hunter Long looked good, tight end for Boston College. Phil Yurkovich as well, their transfer from Notre Dame, their quarterback. He's a big guy with an arm. He's NFL size, NFL strength, and he had a good opening as well. Notre Dame Troy. Elijah Mitchell. I like that running back, man. Elijah Mitchell from Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
Lafayette.
Yeah.
Guys. Him, I like Trey Regis, too. Like, I like both of those guys. But Mitchell, to me, is he's, you know, 225 with bad intentions. A lot of NFLers are going to like him, in my opinion. So he's fun to watch.
Before we move on, I just wanted to shout out what I have now found to be the best name in college football. I don't know if it's the best name, but it's one of the best names. Notre Dame running back, Sebo Flemister.
See what?
C apostrophe B-O.
Sebo.
Sebo Flemister.
Oh, he's got such a nice smile. Look at him.
What a name. He led that game, that Notre Dame South Florida game, in rushing. He had 13 carries for $127 and a touchdown. So his name's up here, and I was like, is that Sebo? Is that what that is?
Notre Dame's got some elite names on that team this year, man. That defense is stacked. Miron Tugovailoa, I can't remember. He's got another last name. It's hyphenated. Then Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa.
That's a good one. Now we got Sebo in the mix.
Now we got Sebo Flemister.
Sebo Flemister. Incredible.
Good team name this year.
What an unbelievable collective of teammates. All right, previewing next week. SEC football is here.
Thank God.
Thank God.
Finally, I can start watching.
Finally, we can start watching. What are some of the matchups that you're liking? Do you have the list up?
I do.
Kyle Trask opens up the season against Ole Miss.
Florida on upset watch. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss.
I'll fight you. Florida's favored by 14.5 in that game. Oklahoma plays against Kansas State. That's a Big 12 matchup, obviously. Kentucky, Auburn. It's pretty interesting. You get Terry Wilson back for Kentucky. You get that nice running back room. He's pretty strong.
Who said quarterback for Kentucky? Because they went through like three last year.
Terry Wilson was going to be the quarterback for them, but then he got hurt, and they couldn't exactly figure it out what happened after that. That's how Lynn Bowden got to the quarterback spot. Bo Nix for Auburn. Seth Williams, wide receiver. Anthony Schwartz, wide receiver. Those guys are the players to watch for Auburn. We really got to see if Bo Nix can take that next step, because I thought – a lot of people were a lot higher on Bo Nix last season than I was, and they were a lot more willing to just say, hey, he was a true freshman, like, give him a pass. And I don't want to be too hard on him, but I thought for the majority of that season last year, Bo Nix was just not good. Like, he was just okay at best. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how Auburn and Bo Nix in that offense comes out this season in their first game against Kentucky.
Yeah, I am as well. I'm interested in what Auburn can do in this weird year, because Auburn's got a little bit of turnover on the defensive line, a little bit of turnover to offensive tackle. But besides that, and those are important spots, besides that, really returns a lot of talent. And so I think that there's a chance Auburn's good this year. I'd like to see it. I like Gus Malzahn. I like Auburn. Pitt, Louisville.
Hold on. I just noticed that Tulsa goes up against Arkansas State next week, which means that
Allie Green and John Adams.
Yeah, Allie Green gets to go against John Adams Jr. Ooh,
right.
Let's go, baby.
It's a early matchup of Trevor's darlings in the season.
Big fan of this one.
Yep. Right. Yeah. So we get Pitt, Louisville, which is your other rank matchup of the weekend. Army, Cincinnati, I think, is also both ranked teams that are playing. Again, I'm excited for what that Cincinnati offense can do under Desmond Ridder. Not sure this is going to be much of a test. Defensively, however, Cincinnati does have a fair number of prospects. There's some secondary guys, James Wiggins, Derek Forrest. They've got a linebacker who's good. Want to prove you can run and tackle. Army's the team to do it against. West Virginia, Oklahoma State, which is your Big 12 matchup. West Virginia looked extremely good. Second year under Neil Brown, a coach who I like a lot, in their first matchup against Eastern Kentucky. They have a quarterback, Jarrett Doggie.
I'm letting you roll on this one.
Jarrett Doggie, who I should know how to say it, because PFF likes him a lot, and Seth Galina did a video about him and said his name like five times, and I was like, is that really his name? But now I don't remember how it's pronounced. Either way, Doggie is a player, a quarterback who they like a lot going back to last year when he won that starting job. I believe he's a Ball State transfer, maybe a Bowling Green transfer. I can't recall. But he played well in week one. So now, obviously, a bigger test against a Power 5 opponent. But he is a guy to put a star beside, because PFF's usually good at finding those guys who are budding into NFL relevancy right as the season comes around. So that's a big one. We get Virginia Tech for the first time as well against NC State. Obviously, Virginia Tech does not bring Caleb Farley onto the field this year. Farley still is an opt-out. Farley's not coming back. But you get Hendon Hooker, junior quarterback, who was spunky to finish last season, won that starting job, held onto it. Going to be interesting to see how he performs now. Set starter for the entire year. He's another guy who, like Doggie, you're looking at as a potential riser in the quarterback class. Question of how far up he can get, but he is on NFL radars in that way. So that's another quarterback that's going to be added to the fold this week.
Tennessee, South Carolina.
I was about to say, there's like none of these SEC matchups really interest me.
No, it's not super juicy yet. Alabama opens up the season against Missouri, so basically Alabama's entire offense versus Nick Bolton, linebacker from Missouri. That's basically all we have to watch for there.
Shout out Nick Bolton.
Georgia, Arkansas.
Nah, wow, bloodbath.
It's a warm-up week. I think it's a warm-up week for everybody, but there's a lot more games on the slate. It's going to feel more like college football like we are used to, and then when we get to throw the Big Ten in there as well, you're going to have to get the multiple TV setup going, folks. So if you're slacking and you don't have the multi-TV setup going right now, you got at least one more week to figure it out. But I get at least two for this weekend. You got to keep tabs on some teams because you never know which team's going to pop off, and you want to be there to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, before we get out of here, got to talk to you about Built Bar. I got to say, I said this to Ben before the podcast started. Built Bar has their own hype video. Like, think of LSU's college football hype videos with swag surfing and all that, and the whole reason why they won the national championship. I just saw a Built Bar hype video that, again, got me hyped to eat a protein bar. Cannot say I've ever been at that point in my life before. I maybe wanted a protein bar before, but I've never been hyped to eat a protein bar before. But I am with Built Bar after watching this video, and that is because they got 18 amazing flavors. 12 of them are the original ones that you love that you've been ordering for the last year. 6 of them brand spanking new with their new formula that they just rolled out. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry, lemon, almond, cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp are the 6 new ones. You could order a mixed box of bars if you're deciding between two. Built Bar doesn't make you choose. You can have both of them. You can also get the water enhancers that they have. You know, it's like that flavor stuff that you just like pour in water, shake it up real good, and then it just doesn't taste like boring old water. It actually tastes like something great and gives you energy throughout the day. They also have those little energy packs that you've seen like Gatorade and Powerade have, except for these are a lot better. I've tasted these, and these are a lot better than those that you can kind of just like take with you throughout the day. Whether you're away from the house or at work or whatever it is, and you're just like, oh man, I need some energy right now. You just pop one of those bad boys in. The day is going to fly by. Built Bar has tons of stuff for you to choose from that you can throw into your diet, whether it is those protein bars, water enhancements, energy boosts. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON, you get $10 off your order, whatever the order it is, over at BuiltBar.com. Now, once again, that's Locked On. It's all caps, no spaces. Looking out for you guys, making sure I explained that correctly. Locked On, you get $10 off whatever you are ordering. You could do single-flavored box for protein bars. You can do multi-flavored boxes for protein bars. You get 18 bars in a single box. So go ahead and check it out. You also get a free cooler with your purchase while the supplies last. So why not just get in on it? Maybe you'll get a free cooler out of it. BuiltBar.com, the only protein bars you are ever gonna need. Wednesday's episode is next. That's what happens.
After
Tuesday.
I don't know. You don't tell me how to live my life.
Check,
I wasn't sure which protest station.
Go check any calendar, and you will find this to be correct. Guys, we mentioned it last week, but I want to make sure that I mention it again this week. Wednesdays for this season, we are doing Watchers Wednesday, which is we want to hear from you. Ben and I talk about our takes on watching film all the time. We do that nearly every single episode, and we appreciate you guys tuning in and hearing our gibberish and thoughts about guys. But we would love to hear from you, and we want to give you that opportunity. So we made it Wednesday on purpose so you can digest what you watched in the NFL on Sunday and Monday, whenever your team was playing, or Thursday, I guess. You know, you could do that too. Whenever your team was playing, go back, watch some of the film, whether it's the All-22 or just the broadcast angle, whatever you have. And if you've got thoughts, like if you think, man, this linebacker for our team did so well, he's going to play a huge role in our team. Like this one cornerback took a huge leap from year two to year three. He's making a big impact. Hey, look out for this running back. I think he's doing great stuff, and not a lot of people are talking about him. Things like that. We would love to hear from you. We'd like to make it even more interactive than just a Fan Friday, because right now on Fan Fridays, what we do is we ask you guys to give us questions. We read your questions live on the air, and then Ben and I will talk about it. But I'd love to get it even more personable with the allies of the pod.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, send us some sort of 60-second audio file or video, whether that's via Twitter or in the premium Slack, because you could send videos and voice recordings over Slack, or Instagram. You could do that for me on Instagram, at @MT_Treverus, Mount Treverus is how you can find it. What I will do is I will take then the audio, just the audio from whatever you send me, and we will try to put it in the show so we can have your words explaining what you see, and then Ben and I are going to talk about it. Ben and I are also going to bring at least two or three guys that we have watched so far this week. We've watched the All-22 of, and we're just going to make it a film-based day. So we would love it if you guys get in the show with us, even more so than you have in the past, because we know y'all got thoughts out there. I am reminded of that every time y'all ask questions, all the conversations that I have off the air, in the premium Slack. Y'all got takes, and y'all see football in a great way as well. We would love to hear from you and get you as more a part of the show here on Watchers Wednesday. So that's what we're doing. If you can figure out the best way to do that, we'd love to get your thoughts in on the show. That's what we're doing tomorrow. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.